Tuesday morning, when the final few members of that young soccer team were extracted safely from that watery cave in Thailand, we all felt such relief, did we not? Such joyous good news when we finally saw the boys smiling through their hospital masks. Good news in a time that seems to be preciously devoid of good news. Though it all, and especially as the details of the rescue were shared, I was in awe of the courage of those who went to extraordinary lengths and great risk to bring them out. That kind of courage always astounds me. Later Tuesday afternoon, I happened to walk by the door of Fire Department's Ladder Company 3 on 13th Street, less than a block from where Marla and I are living. And one by one, I read the names of the 12 courageous firefighters from that company who had risked and lost their lives to help in that horror of that September day 17 years ago. 12 of 343 fire personnel. Such courage humbles me. Those memorial plaques brought to mind a billboard that I had seen last weekend while driving in North Carolina. It showed the now iconic face of a Pakistani girl we know as Malala, who was shot, you may remember, in the head by the Taliban when she was age 15. For speaking up in behalf of girls' education. Next to Malala's serene gaze, the text of the ad said, "Girls should learn history and make it. Courage is in you," it said. "Pass it on." But I wonder sometimes if courage really is in me. So much of life today seems to demand courage. The climate is going crazy. People are becoming more and more alienated from each other. Ignorance is celebrated over basic knowledge. The principalities and powers seek of us submission to all sorts of questionable ends, and we're tugged at times between resignation or action. We know, of course, that acting will actually require some courage of us. Courage to stand in the face of injustice, courage to put our own moral convictions on the line, courage to take personal risks in the service of some greater common good, courage to overcome our fears for the sake of our family or our friends or our community or our nation or our planet. The poet Maya Angelou once argued that courage may be the most important of all the human virtues. Because, she said, without courage, we cannot practice any other virtue with consistency. We can't be kind or true, merciful, generous, or honest, not for long, without courage. Of course, not every form of courage is virtuous. We know that. I read the story recently of a woman and her husband who had to interrupt their vacation for an emergency visit to a dentist. "I want a tooth pulled," she said, "and I don't want Novocaine because I'm in a big hurry. Just extract the tooth as quickly as possible and we'll be on our way." The dentist looked at her and said, "Well, that's courageous. Which tooth is it?" And the woman turned to her husband and said, "Show her your tooth, dear." Maybe not all courage involves personal cost, but more often than not, it does. And one researcher says courage starts with our willingness to be vulnerable. You know that researcher, I suspect. In a renowned TED Talk some years ago, which has now been viewed more than 8 million times on YouTube, University of Houston research professor Brené Brown noted that the word courage was derived from the Latin word cor, which means heart. And its original meaning was to tell the story of who you are with your whole heart. It means to know oneself in all of one's complexity and vulnerability and to let that self come forth. How will we tell the story of who we are with our whole hearts? Knowing our own hearts, how will we act in the face of human need, in the face of great danger, in the face of prejudice and bigotry, in the face of irrational anger or community turmoil? What do our hearts tell us to do in such moments? Or a bit less dramatically, perhaps, where will our hearts take us when, by choice or by circumstance, we're called to relinquish the securities we have known and upon which we've depended and to step out in some new direction, vulnerable to that new space and time we're entering because we are, after all, on a mission of the heart? Maybe it's a move to a new location or leaving home for the first time, moving to the city, beginning a new job, bringing home one's firstborn. Such moments almost always present themselves as occasions of great joy or great fear, and probably, if we're honest, as an admixture of both. In his farewell address to the elders of the Church of Ephesus, the Apostle Paul spoke of facing a decisive and defining moment in his ministry. He was ready, he said, as a captive of the Spirit to head for Jerusalem, not knowing what would happen to him there, except that the testimony of the Spirit had been that it might involve imprisonment and persecution. Still, he said, he would press on in the ministry that he had received to testify to the good news of God's grace. It wasn't necessarily his choice to face such tumult in his life, but Paul did understand it as his calling, and in keeping with his wholehearted desire to serve God. He understood in such frightful prospects the ultimate purpose for which he had been born. In that purpose, he discovered his courage. Now, some of you are of sufficient age to remember John F. Kennedy's response when he was cited for heroism during World War II. In August of 1943, in the Solomon Islands, an enemy's destroyer rammed his PT boat. Kennedy and some of his men reached a nearby island but found that it was held by the enemy, so he and one other officer swam some distance to another island where they persuaded the inhabitants to send a message to the American forces, who then subsequently rescued them. When asked later to define the source of his courage and to comment on his heroism, Kennedy only smiled and said simply, "It was involuntary. They sank my boat." Well, perhaps involuntary, but rooted also in a deep commitment to the men under his command and out of a deep sense of purpose and loyalty. It wasn't voluntary for the Apostle Paul either. His calling to preach and share the good news to the Gentiles, he was summoned to it. And his courage in responding to that calling was not something he conjured up on his own. It was something he discovered in being true to his heart and to his vocation, and in his conviction that he was accompanied in that such vocation by the presence of Christ. The novelist Marilynne Robinson writes, "Theologians talk about a prevenient grace that precedes grace itself and allows us to accept it. But I think there must also be a prevenient courage that allows us to be brave. That is, to acknowledge that there is more beauty than our eyes can bear, that precious things have been put into our hands, and to do nothing to honor them is to do great harm. And therefore, this courage allows us, as the old men said, to make ourselves useful. It allows us to be generous, which is another way of saying the same thing." Courage doesn't always entail death-defying deeds. It often shows up more subtly. Courage is what enables us to get up in the morning some days and to lie down at night on others. It's the act of responding to what is foundational to who and whose we are. 20th century American poet Anne Sexton caught something of Courage's range in a poem she entitled simply, Courage. It's in the small things we see it. The child's first step, as awesome as an earthquake. The first time you rode a bike wallowing up the sidewalk. The first spanking when your heart went on a journey all alone. When they called you crybaby or poor or fatty or crazy and made you into an alien, you drank their acid and concealed it. Later, if you faced the death of bombs and bullets, you did not do it with a banner. You did it with only a hat to cover your heart. You did not fondle the weakness inside you, though it was there. Your courage was a small coal that you kept swallowing. If your buddy saved you and died himself in so doing, then his courage was not courage, it was love. Love as simple as shaving soap. Later, when you face old age and its natural conclusion, your courage will still be shown in the little ways. Each spring will be a sword you will sharpen. Those you love will live in a fever of love, and you'll bargain with the calendar, and at the last moment, when death opens the back door, you'll put on your carpet slippers and stride out. Courage wears many faces. In an exhibition of Norman Rockwell paintings a few years ago, my eyes fixed on a particular drawing, one that many of you know, I suspect, one that depicted a young African-American schoolgirl in a white dress, flanked by four faceless U.S. Marshals, making her way into an elementary school, a racial epithet scrawled on the wall behind her. The school depicted in that painting was the William France Elementary School in New Orleans. The year was 1960, and the child was 6-year-old Ruby Bridges. It was the year that school integration came to New Orleans, and it wasn't pretty. The crowds outside that school hurled tomatoes and racial slurs at Ruby Bridges. Once she finally was inside, white parents came to withdraw their children from the school. Every day for that school year, Ruby Bridges walked through that gauntlet, facing the shouts and the slurs as she made her way into the school. A small 6-year-old girl of whom so many adults were afraid. One day, her teacher, Barbara Henry, looked out the window and thought she saw Ruby talking with the crowd. But Ruby later told Ms. Henry that she wasn't talking to the crowd. She was praying. Her mother had always said to her, "Ruby, if I'm not with you and you're afraid, then say your prayers." And so in the midst of an angry mob, Ruby prayed. She prayed for the people in that crowd. She prayed for those who were hurling abuse at her. Hers is a remarkable story of courage and of faith in the life of a 6-year-old child, a child who, even at that tender age, began to understand something of a purpose and a calling in life that was larger than she was. Courage. Whence does it come? It's rooted in our hearts, in a deep sense of purpose, which is like a small coal one keeps swallowing, even amid persistent fears. It comes from the accompaniment of Christ, who shines light on our path and on our purpose. It comes from the confidence that God has given us all that we need to carry out our vocation, our purpose, and that the future, whatever it holds, is in God's hands. That is the promise of our baptism. That is the promise that comes from the wakefulness to the communion of saints, the great cloud of witnesses singing the background music of our lives, reminding us of who and whose we are. "The Lord is my light and my salvation," said the psalmist. "Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?" Wait for the Lord. Be strong. Let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. Friends, in life and in death, we belong to God, the one who has been our help in ages past, who will be our hope for years to come. We were born to serve that one, born to such a purpose, born with that fire deep in our hearts. Courage is in you. Pass it on. Pass it on.